The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to We the People Radio in sunny California, or hotter than snot, wherever you may be. Isn't it weird that it's so hot across the nation? And here,
it's because of the health care bill decision.
Must be, because it's so nice here.
It's SCOTUS heat.
Yeah, it's supposed to be hot here. It's
summer,
not.
We'll call it summer of SCOTUS.
But I want people to know that if you're thinking about moving to this part of California because the weather is so extraordinary and it's beautiful up here, don't.
And the business opportunities.
And the business opportunities suck. Unemployment is high. Crime is high. So, you know, the weather isn't going to do it for you.
And
not enough.
And a big hand just reached in the door and, like, grabbed us and sucked us out of our chairs.
Hey.
Oh, it's just, you know what? Wherever you live, it's always the people.
Yeah.
You know, it's always people. There are a lot of nice people here.
Yeah, there are
a lot of people, you know, trying to make a difference, and it just, it's just a little bit of an uphill run right now.
Yes,
it is. But you know what? You know, if you think about it, life isn't perfect anywhere else, you know, although we'd like to think like Texas or someplace else has it all nailed. Every place has their issues. Are you having a little problem over there?
I'm not.
Oh, your earphones didn't work?
Yeah. I mean, I know I had my ears cleaned out a couple of weeks ago, so it can't be me. Gotta be the earphones.
I'm not sure if they're like flailing around. Are you still flailing around? Where is our webcam in this studio when you need it?
Yeah, we need one. That was fun.
That was fun.
So anyway, you are joining Elizabeth Woodward, Aaron Ryan. And,
oh, we're going to just go back to the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, because we kind of skipped over the intro here. And Bob Martin with We the People Radio. If you are tuning in for the very first time, this is a talk show about, you know, pretty much the Constitution and everything that falls under it. Limited government, adherence to the Constitution, and fiscal responsibility, which we're still waiting for. And we are at wethepeopleradio.us. We have a great web page that our good friend Robert creates for us on a weekly basis. And everything about today's guest you will find there on that web page. Also, the show's been running now for, we're sneaking up on 2 years here. So every show that we've ever done has its own individual link on that page. And you can listen to the archives and email those links out directly to anybody that you know anywhere. And we do have a tendency to try not to focus too much on our own local issues, but to try to broaden that spectrum a little bit so that any show can apply to you no matter where you live.
We're like the rest of the story. So you hear like little sound bites, or you might not, like today's issue, you wouldn't even hear a sound bite about this one.
Mm-mm.
This is one that just doesn't even hit the radar.
And sound bite meaning no mainstream media will ever touch this one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that goes on that people don't hear about.
No, and if they do hear about it, they don't hear the whole story. Like, I ran into some people last night in the grocery store, and, you know.
You didn't hurt them, did you?
No.
Did you run into them with your grocery cart?
Actually, I didn't run into them at all. Bill saw them over in the potato department, and he was chatting, so I, you know, all I do at groceries is drive the cart. That's my job. Drive the cart. When I go by myself, I come back with a bunch of stuff we don't need. Bill's like, what are you doing?
You switched roles.
So I pretty much just drive the cart. So anyway, I drove the cart over there. And, they were talking about, elderly people and kids and all the programs that are being cut for them and how frustrating it was and all that. And I said, well, so where are you on a sales tax increase? And they said, well, you know, if it'll help those people, you know, we don't mind. You know, we don't have any extra money. You know, we don't mind. We're going to help. And I said, well, would you be interested to know that despite all those cuts, high-speed rail is still on the table and they're planning on going ahead with it?
Mm-hmm.
And you could see her just kind of steal over. And she goes, what?
You know, and it's interesting.
And I thought, isn't that interesting that they haven't really promoted that?
Yeah, and not only that, but I was having a sort of an ongoing chat with a friend on Facebook who is, you know, clearly pretty liberal and, you know, a real big fan of Obamacare. And she did say that the term Obamacare is a GOP term, and I beg to differ because mainstream media, who is in the tank for Obama uses that term as well. But anyway, I digress. But we had, I mean, we had actually a good...
And now you have a microphone to do it with, so yes, take that, yes. Facebook friend.
But, you know, no, she's a great person. But we, you know, we have this slight, you know, this ongoing dialogue about the SCOTUS decision. And the thing that I get is that most people don't really dig in and question where the money is going to come from and how well this plan has been thought out and how well it will be administered and how effective it will be.
Invasive it will be.
And they, basically, they want to go to the feel-good place. In their minds, I know they're crossing their fingers where no one's looking and hoping that this will make everything nice for everyone. And there's no hard, cold facts to support that.
Yeah.
And then people digress and they say, well, you know, how come we're the only civilized country on the planet that doesn't have universal health care for all? How come we're not more like Europe? And I'm thinking, put the brakes on. You really want to be like Europe right now?
Yeah, but
take
besides
that, Spain, Italy, or Greece.
I don't know. The continent of Africa, do they have universal health care?
My point is that, you know, at the end of the day, if the numbers don't add up, it's going to fail. It won't work. More people will be hurt than they already are. You just, I mean, it's painful, but you have to look at the numbers.
Yeah, you do. And just a little bit of realism and you know, just to kind of go back to the California thing, you know, it's easy to drive people to vote for a tax increase when you take away things that they will, for one, notice.
Sure.
And two, will hurt them.
Sure.
So,
and that's emotional blackmail.
Exactly.
That's all that is.
Very much blackmail. And we're doing it.
So
right
high
now.
Speed rail from San Francisco to LA, am I correct?
Yeah, but the
who needs that?
The first part of high speed rail that's gonna go through is like out in the Central Valley. So, you know, are you gonna really drive to Bakersfield, anyone?
Yeah.
Like not even from here.
Yeah.
Sacramento.
Yeah.
Sacramento's gonna drive to Bakersfield.
So they're not
and
cutting
take a train.
That, but they'll cut public safety, schools, and programs for the poor.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, Brown actually had more you know, what are they, $16 billion behind, right?
Yeah.
Because you had four from last year. You had $4 billion in deficit left over from last year because the budget was filled with imaginary money. So that $4 billion caught up to them. So now this year it was 16. But interestingly enough, they had hardly had to cut anything in order to make that work out.
Interesting.
Yeah, how did that work?
Yeah.
What's that filled with?
Yeah.
So,
because they needed to get their paychecks on time.
Well, but even that, it's not, you know, it isn't even that much money. And you can do it anyway. You can pass it and then go back and fix it. I mean, there's loopholes to all that stuff. Not that somebody with some conscience would do that, but we don't, yeah, I don't know. There's differences.
So,
at the end of the day, it's filled with, you know, imaginary stuff. It's not going to provide the things we need. And we still have a whole bunch of crap we don't need.
And folks,
Give them any more money, they will waste it.
Yes, if you're an altruistic person and you say, I'm willing to pay more taxes, you better be careful because there's no guarantee that they're going to spend that extra tax money on what they say they're going to. You have to know that by now. Please tell me you are not that ignorant.
Well, the off-highway vehicle, you know, all their green sticker fees, they raided that fund.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing is sacred. So if you really want to help people, and your goal is to help people,
if that's really what you care about,
don't do it through the tax system. I mean, go look at your local rescue mission, look at your local shelter, your food banks. You know, that's help that goes directly to the people that you want to see served.
Mm-hmm.
Do that.
Yeah.
If
get it as local as you can.
Because, I mean, I'm not advocating, hey, hoard for, you know, because that's always the criticism is, oh, you guys are advocating hoarding, you know. You want to keep everything and you want other people to suffer. Well, that's just flatly not true.
No.
People don't want that. The bad part is if it's not going to be actually used for what it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's not going to go where it's supposed to go. And, like, you know, the high-speed rail thing, for heaven's sakes, you know, you have the guy who's a really huge contractor or the huge contractor on it is the head of the high-speed rail thing now. So it's just ridiculous.
They don't even hide the fact that they've got conflicts of interest.
No. So if you're going to vote for a tax increase in November, please check the status of high-speed rail. If it's still on the table, vote no on tax increases. they will just waste it. So, Bob, okay, so we're all bitter about taxes. Why don't we even talk about taxes?
What about taxes?
We have our guest
argument or the notion that there are a sizable number of voters in the state who vote for tax increases because they don't pay any taxes to begin with.
Sure. It's fine by them.
They don't have any skin in the game, in other words.
And they actually think that money's going to filter down to them.
Well, a lot of it does.
As a matter of speaking, it does.
Well, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the people that that are on all the public assistance programs now, but those are the same ones that are getting cut.
Yeah, kind of, but there's not a lot of sensible cut. You know, of that sensible cutting, you know, they were looking at shortening the CalWORKs time frame from 4 to 2 years. So after 2 years, you know, you really need to go back to work. And there's story after story after story.
And, you know,
when the unemployment and the benefits run out, people do go back to work.
Yeah.
And, yes, we do have an employment shortage.
And it's funny because when they talk about shortening the school year with the state of our public schools in California, I'm not sure that's a horrible thing.
I mean, I know, baby. That's the show.
I know that puts a
that
burden.
Many fewer days for indoctrination. Yes.
Yeah, I know that puts a burden on the parents, though. That makes it really tough for them. But really, I mean,
well, it rolls.
Are your kids going to come out dumber because of that? No, probably not.
That's Elizabeth Woodward. In case you were curious.
Blame.
So we're going to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with Josh Bronis from the Houndsman, the California Houndsman. And it looks like the website address needs to be adjusted on our page. We have Houndsman. Don't go to thehoundsman.com. But when I
put it on Facebook, I put Houndsman, and then I had to go back and put Houndsmen.
See, this is how much the general public knows about this. Josh is just shaking his head on the other end.
I'm expecting
to hear a click any minute.
Yeah, rolling his eyes. I can see you rolling your eyes,
We're
Josh.
Going to swiftly thank our advertisers. We'll be right back, and we will talk about Second Amendment for those of you who don't know anything about hound hunting.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You cry all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
It's another one out of the ballpark. You're listening to We the People Radio.
Yes.
Yes. All right, on that happy note. See, we shift so quickly,
yeah.
From the baying of taxes to the baying of hounds. How was that? Pretty good segue.
And we always tell you, be prepared to be scared, but we will do it in a really funny way. Guaranteed.
If at all possible.
We'll be laughing and crying at the same time.
If at all possible. Hey, so we have Josh Bronis on the line from down in the Sacramento area. Josh?
Good morning. How are you?
We didn't scare you, did we?
Not at all.
Yeah, we didn't hear you hang up.
We were ready for the click. He's like, these people are nutty. We didn't know that.
Scarier for the guests than it is for the listeners.
Yes, probably. Okay, so you are with the California Houndsmen. You're actually the president of the California Houndsmen, I should point out.
Correct. President of California Houndsmen for Conservation.
And you guys have been on, and I guarantee you most people do not know that there has been a Senate bill pending, still sort of loitering, Senate Bill 1221, if you want to look it up, California Senate Bill 1221, and that would ban the use of hounds in hunting bear and bobcat, among, I'm
yes,
sure,
it would.
Many
for
other
both
things.
The recreational hunting as well as for the use of hounds for wildlife research.
Mm-hmm. And
it doesn't end there. It also would allow any fish and game employee, whether they are fish and game warden all the way down to the person that is at the front desk that answers a phone, to kill any dog that they suspected of threatening to injure a bear or bobcat. And then, as if that was not bad enough, it would free that employee from having any civil or penal liability to that dead dog's owner.
Jeez Louise.
So basically, they can determine using their own personal criteria on what constitutes a threat to the bobcat or the bear by the dog?
That's exactly right. The language of the bill does not define what constitutes a threat, so it's going to be left to each individual's own discretion and judgment as to whether or not barking at the animal is constituting a threat, or chasing it, or being in the vicinity with it. There is no language of any kind that would provide any guidance.
Jeez Louise. And that's what we need is more unfettered supervision with fishing game. So, you know, how many people, give me an idea, in the state of California, how many people are involved with hound hunting?
According to the Department of Fish and Game statistics, approximately 5,200 to 5,700 men and women either live in California and partake in the sport or come to California to do so.
Now, Josh, do you have just a round economic figure on the trickle-down dollars that affect the state of California with this sport?
Yes, according to some analysis, approximately $11,000 per year is spent by each and every one of those, say, 5,200 houndsmen and women. So when you add that up, that comes out to a pretty significant amount of money.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, truly in the millions, 57,200 or 57,200,000, I believe is what it comes out to. And when you consider the fact that these men and women are going to the most rural parts of our state, that 57 million is not going into the metropolitan centers with a significant tax base. This is going to those areas of the state that have been hardest hit by the ongoing attacks on agriculture and the timber industries. And so these small communities need every dollar of that 57 million, and us houndsmen and women are more than happy to give it to them in order for us to enjoy the sport we love so much.
Now, here's a question. Let's say that this particular this bill passes. What will be the what will be the impact on ancillary businesses such as dog trainers, veterinarians, pet supply stores, and such?
Well, part of that $11,000 per houndsman or woman per year goes into providing the goods and services of the businesses that you identified. What I don't believe the legislators have a very keen understanding of is that without these hounds out there in the field educating these bears and keeping them away from human activity, it's going to be the timber industry and the agriculture industry and the beekeeping industry that suffered the brunt of this ill-conceived bill. As an example, there is a timber industry up in the northwest corner of California that suffers, by their own estimation, $3 to $5 million per year in damage to their timber from the bears. And this comes about by virtue of the fact that the bears will, as a way of marking their territory and showing their size to other bears, they will scratch the bark of the trees that are going to be harvested for timber, and they will effectively kill that tree or stunt its growth in such a way that they're not able to get the greatest value out of that one tree. Well, when you consider the fact that there are 40,000 bears in this state and growing, that obviously creates a highly, highly sensitive and risky number of bears that would be in that timber country. Beekeepers are also similarly impacted by the bears, and most people think that bears go after the bee boxes for the honey. We've all been raised to watch Yogi Bear and think that or Winnie the Pooh and think that honey is what they're after. Really, that's not at all what they're after. They're going after the baby bees, and so when
really?
They go and break open a bee box, they will destroy the entire bee box and rip open all of the colony to get to those baby bees, and they'll wipe out that entire colony.
They eat baby bees?
Yes,
wow.
Ma'am. Yeah.
Well, who knew?
Only on We the People
without
Radio.
The ability to, to raise those bees, that will kind of ripple through the rest of the beekeeping industry for and into those beekeepers that do raise bees for the honey. Not every beekeeper raises bees for honey. Some raise bees just for to provide new queens to other beekeepers, sure, or to provide new young bees to other beekeepers.
And without bees, I mean, that screws up everything.
Well, yeah.
I mean, our trees don't pollinate, and all sorts of problems.
A lot of vegetables.
Yeah, were talking about how bees are actually really having a hard time right now. So this would actually be a...
Now, Josh,
did not know that.
What about jobs lost?
Well, there are some net effects. Obviously, there are more than 100 men and women who make their living taking other people out hunting for bear and bobcat, and they do this primarily with the use of hounds. The use of hounds is something that goes to the core of a person, and if this legislation was to pass, most of these individuals would not just simply trade their dogs for a rifle with a high-powered scope and continue to take people hunting. It would really be like asking a fly fisherman to stop using his flies and put a fat night crawler on his hook. He or she just wouldn't consider doing such a thing. So certainly those people are going to be out of business the day that this would take effect on January 1st of 2013. But then because of the positive contribution of the hound hunting community to the rural economies, I think it's realistic to anticipate there would be some job loss in those smaller communities.
Sure. I mean, just the veterinarian in Fort mm-hmm. Jones, mm-hmm. and that's a community of 630-ish people. That veterinarian, someone was estimating, it was probably $50,000 to $60,000 that came into his business. Not clear profit, but just, you know, volume coming in just from care of hounds. And
exactly right. So, I mean, we look at our hounds like somebody would look at their Porsche or their Lamborghini. You've worked a long, long time, and you've had to spend a lot of money for this thing that you're so proud of. So the last thing you're going to want to do is neglect it. And so we make sure that we give our dogs the greatest care that we can.
And Josh, we talked about this last week. There are a lot of people that go out into the woods for various reasons and take their dogs with them. You know, one in particular in the timber industry, when you've got foresters out in the woods tallying trees, marking timber, marking watercourses, whatever they're doing out there, they oftentimes will take dogs with them just so that they're alerted in the event that there is a bear or a mountain lion nearby for their own personal safety. How would this affect them?
This would affect them no differently, unfortunately, than it would affect myself as a houndsman. The bill is so poorly written that it would identify any dog threatening that chases a bear as being in violation of the law, and any dog that is deemed to be threatening a bear or bobcat could be killed without due process of law. So it does not discriminate only against dogs that are out there intentionally pursuing bear and bobcat, but it could be a Forest Service dog, it could be a livestock dog that's protecting its the herd of cows or flock of sheep, or it could be your pet dog. Your family could simply be out in the woods on a picnic, and you've got your pet dog, no matter how large or small. If that dog is determined to be chasing a bear or bobcat, you'd be in violation of the law. And that dog's life could be at risk accordingly.
And certainly that is their most basic instinct, so you can't curtail that.
No, you're exactly right. Nor are you going to be able to anticipate that there's a bear or bobcat nearby.
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's why you take your dog.
Yeah, exactly. Holy cow. Well,
Before we go on our break?
Yeah, let's take a swift break. We're going to come back with Josh, and for those of you that haven't figured it out already, this is all about your Second Amendment rights, and we're going to make that connection if you haven't already. If you're a fan of the Second Amendment, this that's where this goes, and that's why it's been started. So you should be nervous. Anyway, we'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
I know. dog as much as I love for you. But you may fade, my dog will always come through. All he asks from me is the food to give him strength. All he ever needs is love, and that he knows he'll get. So I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may fade, my dog will always come through.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
See the dog and butterfly up in the air, like to fly. The dog and butterfly. Below, she had to try. She rolled back down to warm, soft ground, laughing. She don't know why.
We're back.
You're fired, Bob. That should have been dog and bumblebee.
Baby bee. Dog and baby bee.
Well, I found an insect. What do you want?
Very good. Very good on the insect. Good. That's excellent.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. We're with Josh Bronis of the California Houndsman for Conservation. We're talking about, I don't know, just imagine the days of walking through the forest with your family, your kids, the butterflies, the bees, and your dog. And the dog is chasing the butterflies, the bees, and sees a bear, or thinks he sees a bear and runs off, and all of a sudden you hear a big bang. I'm sorry.
And of course,
does that wake everybody up?
And Josh, aren't they going to tell you that that's not going to happen? Do you get to have discussion on this, or is this one of those bills that just blows through with no...
Well, we've been fighting it every step of the way, and we're definitely starting to have an impact. You're starting to realize just how many people are going to be affected by this legislation and the number of industries that will be affected. This is not just about hunting any longer. Last Tuesday, the bill came up in the Assembly Water Parks and Wildlife Committee, and in a very unusual move, they called for a vote four times. They failed to get the number of yes votes that they were anticipating, and so they kept calling for a vote, trying to twist the arms of a couple of Democrats that had refused to vote yes. And then, in a highly unusual move, they called a 45-minute recess in order to try and get a urban Democrat who had called in sick that morning to come in to the Capitol in order to vote yes. And failing to do so, they've called a fifth vote for this coming Monday. Mm-hmm. This will be a vote that is not going to be made after any additional public testimony. The room that they're scheduling the vote in is so small that, for the most part, members of the public will not be able to come in and observe in person. They'll have to stand out in the halls and watch it on the TV. But we're letting them know that we are not going to let them pass legislation in complete absence of public input and without us keeping a close eye on them. And so we're organizing a rally. We're hoping to have 1,000 or more people attend. And for all your listeners, you're certainly welcome. You do not have to hunt with hounds by any means. You don't have to be a farmer, a rancher, a beekeeper, or involved in the timber industry. Rather, all we ask is for Californians who are sick to death and fed up of our elected leadership focusing so much of their time on such ill-conceived legislation when we've got so many legitimate problems that do require their attention.
Yes. And as is the case with most poorly written legislation, this has a devastating impact on so many people and so many industries that most folks wouldn't think of.
Well, you know, and even more than that, Josh, you know, why do you think they singled out Houndsmen? I mean, was there some kind of problem, or did this just sort of come at you out of the blue?
Well, this is the fourth bill that has been introduced that would attempt to ban the use of hounds, and the leading proponents of this bill is the Humane Society of the United States. They're the largest anti-hunting organization in the world. You'll notice that I didn't characterize them as the largest animal welfare organization in the world, and the reason for that is because if you understand what the true intent of the HSUS is, it's not at all to promote the welfare of dogs and cats and to make sure that animals are treated humanely, as their name would suggest and as their television commercials would suggest. This is all about, first and foremost, the elimination of hunting. The individuals that run HSUS, beginning first with their CEO, Wayne Fuseli, their belief system is no different than that of Ingrid Newkirk, who is the president and co-founder of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. But Wayne Fuseli is clever enough to realize that he has to work on the outside edges. He can't meet his ultimate objective head on. We, as animal owners and as meat eaters, as hunters, as people who enjoy rodeos and circuses, are far too numerous and far too powerful for him to go up against us right off the bat. So what he wants to do is kind of divide and conquer and take this this war in incremental phases. Hound hunting is probably, next to falconry, the smallest community in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knows that we are few in numbers, and so he looks at us as being the most vulnerable. We're also, because we're the smallest in number, the most easy to demagogue. And because very few people know who we are and what we do, it's a lot easier to convince that average soccer mom living in the Bay Area that we are as the cruel and bloodthirsty monsters that the HSUS makes us out to be. But when we're given the opportunity to present the facts, we're able to dispel the myths that they level against us. As an example, they attempted in a press release and a rally that they held on June the 12th at the Capitol to correlate hound hunting with inherent criminality. And when we accessed the same data that they had taken from Fish and Game, we were able to do some basic math that we learned in school to identify 0.6% of all houndsmen and women as criminals. So this is what we would call the bad apples in our bunch. Less than 1% of all hound hunters on an annual basis receive a citation or receive a complaint that did not lead to a citation. But the HSUS does not let the truth get in the way of the story that they're trying to say. If they are able to ban hound hunting, they're going to go after the use of dogs for bird hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Next, for quail and for pheasant.
And deer and everything else.
Exactly right, and so on it goes. And then after hunting is gone, that's going to do two things. One is going to eliminate, to their mind, the justification for the Second Amendment, which,
yep,
anyone who understands the Constitution knows that is not what the Second Amendment is about at all. But then that will be one less group to stand in their way when they go up against rodeos and circuses and then meat eating. And then, yes, I know I might sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Not
but
here,
even
actually.
The ownership of animals.
Of pets, yeah. They don't want us to own pets.
And look at it this way. If you're listening out there and you're shaking your head and you're thinking this makes no sense to me, doesn't the Humane Society in part fund Fish and Game? And if so, if they're all about the fair and ethical treatment of animals, how could they justify Fish and Game shooting dogs?
And you hit the nail on the head, and that is a tremendous inconsistency with this bill. And this bill shows their true intentions. They care less about the dog than they do about the wild animal. But they know that if they don't say that they're concerned about the welfare of the hound, they're going to alienate people that might otherwise support the bill. And so they have to pretend to care about that dog. But the language of the bill certainly indicates otherwise. But Wayne Pacelli there are several quotes out there that indicate what his ultimate intentions are. One is, one generation and out, we have no problem with the extinction of domestic animals. And this was quoted in an animal rights magazine called Animal People. Another one is, I don't have a hands-on fondness for animals. To this day, I don't feel bonded to any non-human animal. I like them and I pet them and I'm kind to them, but there's no special bond between me and other animals. And this was in a book called Blood Ties, Nature, Culture, and the Hunt. Now, Wayne Pacelli realizes that if these quotes get out there, that this is going to undermine their ultimate agenda. And so, in a classic revisionist history move, he authored a book called The Bond, which celebrates the relationship between humans and domestic animals. So he's trying to kind of undo what he has said in the past that he now knows is out there available for the rest of us to see.
Did he call it Dreams from My Pets? Because that would be excellent.
Hey, so can we find these quotes anywhere?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, if you were to go out to the internet and do a search on Wayne Pacelli and quotes.
How do you spell his last name?
It's that simple. You don't have to hire a private investigator to dig up the dirt on Wayne Pacelli. It's out there in great abundance.
How do you spell his last name?
It's Pacelle.
Oh, see, I would have gotten that all wrong. Huh. And, yeah, because if there's a whole segment of our population that thinks that the Second Amendment is about hunting.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we keep and bear arms, is so we can hunt. And at the end of the day, no.
No, it's actually to keep the government at
bay. That was designed to keep the government, I was going to say to keep the government honest, but that hasn't really worked out so well.
And I just want to point out that now more than ever, there is a huge increase in the people that own pets, and the pet industry and the ancillary businesses is huge.
It's like you're a dog sitter.
If they shut down...
Yeah.
The ownership of pets, I can't even imagine the economic devastation just from this one industry alone.
Yeah. Well, besides the fact that, are you kidding me? Can you imagine going house to house? Are you harboring a dog in your house? What the heck? You know what? That just irritates me. just takes away all my snarkiness and drives me right straight to irritation. Let's thank our advertisers before we get too irritated, and we're up against top of the hour. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Josh Bronis. We'll be back in 2 minutes at KCNR 1460 AM.
Baby back, dressed in black. She can't so walk in the dark. Yes, a walking bird dog. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you how to walk the dog. Come on now, come on, come on.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Now Red, he's the damnedest dog that I've ever seen. Got a nose that can smell a two-day trail. He's a four-legged tracking machine. You can consider yourself mighty lucky to get past the gators and the quicksand beds. But all these years that I've been here, ain't nobody got past Red. And the warden sang, come on somebody, why don't you run? Old Red's itching that little fun. Get my lantern, get my gun. Red'll have you treat for the morning ground.
We're back. We the People Radio. Join us at wethepeopleradio.us. Jump on the chat room. Check out our website. There's a great picture of our guest, Josh Bronis, with three hounds. He is with California Houndsmen for Conservation, California. Josh, are those your dogs in that picture?
Those are, in fact, my dogs, yes.
They're beautiful.
They're insanely cute.
They're beautiful. So,
thank you so much. I think so myself.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
And that's
dogs.
An awesome picture, too.
And, you know, our great website is intended for you to be able to actually follow along if you're on the internet while we're having today's show. There's a lot of information about Josh, links to the California Houndsmen for Conservation, all the contact information, everything you need to know. You can kind of read along while we're chatting with our guest today. And before we get back to Josh, we've got a caller. Lydia, good morning.
Good morning, Aaron and Elizabeth. I just wanted to ask you to please let us know again what that Senate bill number was. Also, I was going to say, you know, if people can't protest in Sacramento, they can certainly call their senators, their representatives, and tell them how they feel about this bill. I think, you know, there isn't any family that doesn't own a Labrador or any kind of a dog that when they go camping or they go out into the woods, they don't take their dogs with them. They're family.
That's
and
right.
And to think that maybe they might get shot, it's really absurd. Absurd. So,
and no recourse against the fish and game official that shoots your dog. No recourse at all.
Exactly. So if you can get that bill out, I will definitely call, and I'm sure a lot of other people will too.
All right. Thanks, Lydia.
Thanks, Lydia.
Okay, bye now.
Okay, so that is Senate Bill 1221.
And if you do go to wethepeopleradio.us on that webpage, if you scroll down below the information about Josh, you will see the phone numbers and the assembly members that you can call.
Yep, it says the California Houndsmen need your help, and it gives you the chair of the committee and some other people as well, because like here locally, Assemblyman Nielsen, Senator LaMalfa, they're not voting for this. You know, so bombarding those offices with phone calls,
clearly, if they have to go to a fifth vote, they're getting some opposition from the constituents.
Yeah.
So keep those phones ringing, folks. You have no idea how well that works.
Yeah, and the other thing too is I would just take a look at where the pressure is coming from. And a lot of it is urban. So if you know people in the Bay Area, in the LA area, look and see if any of these are their representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And have them call. Have their friends call. That counts a lot. They're going to vote for them.
Hey, Josh. So can you give us the link between the Humane Society and Fish and Game?
Yes. So in recent years, the HSUS, again, to try and gradually work their way towards their ultimate agenda, they've kind of infiltrated the fish and game, and they've done this through the donation of a whopping $4,000 to the canine program that the Department of Fish and Game has. Now, when you consider the fact that HSUS has a $178 to $179 million annual budget, $4,000 is chump change, to put it mildly. But they've gotten a lot of mileage out of this $4,000 that they give to the department every year. There's been press conferences that were conducted between members of the Fish and Game and members of the HSUS, and they've been able to do a lot of promotion of this donation on their website so as to, again, make themselves appear to be very reasonable. We're only opposed to the poaching of wildlife, as they would have you believe. Now, in more recent years, because of their growing prominence and influence in the state of California, we now have a member of HSUS that is on the CalTIP board. Now, CalTIP is a board that's affiliated with the department, but not part of the Department of Fish and Game, that manages the funds that are donated and then allotted for rewards that led to the arrest of an individual for poaching and pollution crimes.
Now, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the Humane Society involved in the warden schools for Fish and Game?
That's been a rumor that's been out there. I have not been able to corroborate that at all at this time.
Okay, that's good to know.
I checked, and they said it was a $5,000 grant.
Mm, okay.
That sparked this whole big controversy, and that there's nothing to it, and there's no connection. But we'll all just pay attention to that anyway, if they don't mind. The connection between, like, the regular, you know, your regular puppy and kitty adoption place in your town and the Humane Society of the United States, what's the relationship there?
There largely is none. I mean, even on the HSUS website, they indicate that they do not own or control a large number of the local shelters. That is a misnomer based on their name, the Humane Society of the United States. I truly believe that that's intentional, that they continue to perpetuate that misunderstanding, because, again, who among us would not be willing to donate to an organization that's out there to try and ensure that dogs and cats are or adopted and kept in better care of, right? But they really have little affiliation with the local animal shelters and the local humane societies. They're not an umbrella organization for them. They do not donate or contribute a large amount of their annual budget to those activities. In fact, less than 1% of their annual budget goes to the local humane societies and animal shelters.
See, well, that's really important.
It is important to know, because most people wouldn't know that.
No, and Friday night, there was a big award given to Dr. Ray John, who is the,
He's the CEO of the Haven Humane Society.
Right. And at first when I saw that on my calendar, I was like, oh, man. And when I had this show, you know, coming on Sunday, and I had to remind myself, wait a minute, those are two different entities.
And I might, and I want to point out, you know, we were talking earlier about not voting for tax increases, but giving your money locally. And this is all the more reason why you don't make donations to the Humane Society
of the national,
yeah, the United States. Yep. You stay as local as you can if you really want to make an impact.
And I would definitely suggest that you guys investigate the Haven Humane Society further, because just because there's no formal tie between the Humane Society of the United States and the local Humane Societies doesn't mean that there's necessarily not going to be sympathy given to the HSUS by the local Humane Societies. And I think this has also been something that has been cultivated by the HSUS, because if they can kind of infiltrate the local humane societies and animal shelters with people that think like they do, it kind of expands their force. Specifically as it relates to the Haven Humane Society, they had actually indicated publicly that they had to euthanize a black bear that has supposedly been mauled by hounds. Well, if you consider that a hound is about 50 pounds, you saw the pictures of my dog,
sure,
on your website there, compared to a black bear in California, which is an average of 250 pounds or so, the mauling of a bear by a hound is highly, highly unlikely. But they nevertheless indicated that they had received or come into contact with or found a black bear that had been mauled by hounds that was so in such bad shape that they had to euthanize it. Well, we had a reporter share this with us, and we told him what the steps would be, how highly unlikely it would be for this bear to be mauled, and what the steps would be to euthanize the black bear. He did some further digging, and he's finding that there is no corroboration whatsoever. They are not authorized to euthanize any wildlife, much less a black bear, and they did not contact the Department of Fish and Game. And so now this is instigating an investigation into either their activities or certainly their statements.
Now, we're coming up on a hard break, but I just want to encourage people, check out your local nonprofits that are in the rescue business and the placement of animals in good homes. Get as local and as personal as you can on that.
Absolutely. And we'll be back with Josh Bronis when we return, because there's still more to tell on the story. Please go to wethepeopleradio.us, take a look at the information on there, decide if you need more, because we want to hear from you if anything is lacking. And we'll be back with you in 5 short minutes. Here comes the news.
More of We the People straight ahead after the 9 o'clock news here at KCNR Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
If you're just joining us, you are joining Hour 2 of We the People Radio. Hope you had a great coffee break. You've got a fresh hot cup of coffee, and you're prepared to be scared for another hour, because we aim to please. You're joining Elizabeth Woodward, Aaron Ryan, and Bob Martin. We're talking to Josh from the California Houndsman for Conservation. If you are even slightly misguided in your idea that taking dogs out for hunting is cruel and inhumane punishment, you need to stay tuned. We're going to kind of connect the dots between the Humane Society, fishing game, and the Second Amendment.
Yes, we are. That was me choking in the background. California Houndsmen for Conservation is a nonprofit conservation and hunting organization that's been in existence since 1972. We're going to shorten it to CHC because that's easier to roll off your tongue. They've sponsored and testified in support of tougher poaching measures, crafted anti-poaching language, and established a monetary reward fund for information leading to the arrest and conviction of anyone misusing hounds for the commercialization of black bear parts.
So, basically,
and I guess there is a big commercial enterprise for that.
So in a nutshell, they're the good guys.
Exactly. Josh has hunted with hounds for 26 years, so he's fairly smart on the topic here.
And jump on the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us. There's a great photo of Josh and his three dogs that he uses when he's out hunting, and it'll personalize this conversation for you a little bit and everything you need to know about Josh and California Houndsmen.
There you go.
Follow along.
And we have a caller on the line from Bakersfield named?
Robert.
Named Robert. Fire away, Robert.
Hello, Mr. Bruns. I was listening to the Assembly Committee on Tuesday where, and Mrs. Haldeman, the Assemblywoman from Fresno, she said something about, like, it's already happened in California, like, with mountain lions, and there was a 600% increase in attacks. Could you explain that, sir? She said something about Oregon, too, and, like, I didn't really have a chance. There was no chance for that to be further explained. Could you explain that, sir?
Absolutely, Robert. That's an outstanding question. Yes, yeah, so Assemblymember Halderman was referencing some data that had been that's out there on a number of websites that track the number of attacks on humans after the hunting of mountain lions was banned in California. And she also cited similar data that tracked the number of black bear attacks and the number of bears that were killed for depredation or killed for reasons involving damage to humans and human activity as a result of a prohibition on the hunting of black bear in Oregon with hounds. Kind of as a way of saying, look, folks, we've made this mistake before in the state with mountain lions. Oregon has made the mistake already with black bear. Let's learn from that and not make the mistake again. And so that is in fact the case. So after mountain lion hunting was banned permanently in California in 1990 via Proposition 117, there were a number of attacks on humans. And if you look at the graph from the 20th century, it was pretty stable and constant up until the 90s, and then it shot up. There were two women killed in a single year in 1994. And despite that, in 1996, when there was an attempt to reverse that ban and reestablish the authority of the Fish and Game Department to manage mountain lions as they deemed appropriate, it lost by 19 points. And there have been a couple of additional individuals that have been killed in the more recent years, including a very healthy adult man who was bicycling in a park called Whiting Park. And that park, of all things, was funded by Proposition 117. So talk about insult to injury. to have someone killed by a mountain lion, but then to be killed in an area with funds that were procured from the very bill that ballot initiative that prevented the management of mountain lions in the state.
And how do we manage mountain lions in this state?
We do not. Essentially, the only way to, quote-unquote, manage mountain lions, but I would argue it's not really management, it's just reactive, is to petition for a depredation permit once you've been the victim of some kind of damage. So if a mountain lion has killed your dog, your sheep, your goat, your cattle, then you can go to the Department of Fish and Game and ask for a depredation permit. They'll come out, verify whether or not they believe it was a mountain lion or perhaps a coyote or bear. And if they do believe it was a lion, then they will issue you a permit and expect you to be able to take care of it from there. So So it's highly, highly reactionary. It does not prevent damage from happening. And most importantly for us and for the mountain lions, it doesn't teach the mountain lions that coming around areas of human settlement are a no-no. That's a bad idea. So they kill one sheep or goat, and they pay with that mistake with their lives.
And they come back. Robert?
And they come back.
Still in there?
Yes, sir.
sorry. We like jumped in and preempted you.
Are you dumbfounded, Robert?
You know, it's just kind of shocking that they would try to do something, again, that's been shown in California and Oregon to result in more human attacks. It's like, what is their priority?
Yeah, Robert, you're not looking for logic or reason here, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're super sorry about that.
Why would you look for such a thing?
Well, it's kind of like we were talking at the top of the last hour. You know, all these different things that have been cut out of the budget that people are upset about with, you know, public safety and all these things struggling, and yet they're going ahead with high-speed rail.
And starting in the middle of nowhere.
Down by you.
Oh, wow.
And you're going to jump on that high-speed rail, Robert, when you want to go to L.A.?
Yeah. Bakersfield to Barstow or something like that?
Yeah. When you want to go to Coalinga.
Yeah. Bakersfield to Coalinga. Awesome.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate the answer, Mr. Bronis.
Thanks, Robert.
We hope you'll listen again. We love hearing from Bakersfield. That's awesome.
Okay, goodbye.
And for people who have questions for Josh, you can reach us at 530-605-4567.
Jump on the chat room. It's alive and well at wethepeopleradio.us. We're with Josh Bronis of the California Houndsman for Conservation. So, Josh, is this expanding to other states, or is there the danger of that?
There's certainly the danger of it. I mean, and that's definitely the intent of the HSUS. Wayne Pacelli is quoted as saying that we want to ban all hunting, and that we are going to take it species by species, state by state, starting with California. So his sights are set very, very squarely on our state first. And once we've been taken care of, then he's certainly going to move on. Now, in recent years, they have been met with a lot of opposition. As more and more people become aware of what their ultimate intentions are, the opposition is starting to gather together. So hunting and meat eating and fishing and the pet interests, all these communities are coming together to resist the HSUS, because we all recognize that they are the common enemy. And so in response to that, after a number of failures in the the legislature, HSUS has kind of gone around to other states.
Uh-huh.
And they've had some mixed success, but I believe that as more and more people become aware of what their ultimate intentions are, they're going to be less and less successful.
Yeah, because they've got a creepy core, you know, at the center of HSUS. It's not really about animals at all. It's a lot about control.
And you know what's really interesting is, again, at the top of the last hour, we were talking a little bit about, I'm not getting off topic here, I have a point, but we were talking about the recent SCOTUS decision on the health care bill, and how many people point to Europe and say, why can't we be more like Europe? Well, you know, my husband and I had an exchange student from Italy a few years ago who lived with us for the school year. And he was completely blown away by the fact that people had pets, because they didn't do that there. So you still want to be like it? I mean,
yeah.
Europe?
Yeah, really.
Really?
Oh, yeah, Josh, here we go. I just looked at the Humane Society of the United States, and on the HSUS website, there's a big link on the front, Humane Alert in California, Stop the Cruel Hound Hunting of Predators. That's actually almost humorous that they would use the word predators in that.
Yeah, in the same sentence. They're a predator, but don't be cruel.
Let's stop hunting predators. Because we should, just let them overpopulate, I guess. Yeah, what do you say to that? Okay, so it says here on their site, update on SB 1221, failed to pass by one vote at the Assembly Water, Wildlife, and Parks Committee on the 26th. Moves forward on a motion for reconsideration. So when does that vote come up again, and when is the protest at the Capitol?
Both the vote and the protest are going to be tomorrow, July the 2nd. The special vote is going to be held after the assembly floor session comes to a conclusion. And they're going to move into a very, very small room. There's literally just a conference table there. And there they will take a vote on 1221.
Now, and so roughly, roughly what time will that be?
That's approximately noon or so.
Okay, so there's time to make phone calls in the morning.
I am going
to
be there. Josh, I get to meet you tomorrow. I'm going to be there. That's going to be
wonderful.
Awesome.
You are certainly welcome.
Will do. I'll get everybody from our office to go down there. Well, I'm sure we'll already be there, but still. I've got to go there for something else, but
yes,
nice.
State Senator Doug LaMalfa will be speaking at our rally, as will Assemblymember Bill Berryhill. Both Berryhill and LaMalfa have been tremendously helpful. They recognize what the ultimate intentions of HSUS are. They certainly recognize that this is comes down to kind of another example of class warfare, but not between rich and poor, but ultimately between rural and urban.
Mm-hmm.
That the urban legislators are essentially bullying the rural legislators and their constituents. It's interesting to point out that there are now 17 county governments and counting who have come out in formal and public opposition to 1221, and just one that is in support of 1221. And go figure, that one is Marin County, where they have neither bears nor bear hunters.
Nice. Well, you know, it's interesting because I was speaking with somebody from the Capitol the other day, and they said, well, you know, this urban and rural loggerhead really came about in 1966. And I was five. I guess I didn't care about politics then. But apparently in 1966, there was a Supreme Court decision that required let's talk about prior. It's easier to talk about what it used to be. It was, our state was set up more like the federal system, where we had senators based on geographic area, not population. The assembly members were chosen by population. So then, of course, you had heavy urban overload. But the senatorial districts were set up with geography. So that balanced things out. So the urban people and the rural people had some parity there. Like our Senate district up here that we're in is 12 counties. We would have had four senators back then.
Hmm.
And the Supreme Court decided that that was unfair. It was some case in Alabama, ostensibly for a civil rights type deal. But anyway, it stopped allowing us to do that. And we went to popular vote for the senators. And that was based on numbers. So here we are again. You know, we have
underrepresented.
Yeah, the rural people are overloaded, you know, or overblown in the assembly and the Senate. And when it comes to stuff like this, man, you got to just prevail on them, you know, and people that we know that live in urban areas that can lean on these folks.
So what's your feel for the vote tomorrow, Josh?
It really depends on the political horse trading that has been going on in the last few days and over the weekend. I mean, that's a sad and simple reality that I'm sorry to say exists down at our Capitol. I mean, there was a lobbyist who was so disgusted by the turn of events with 1221 that he said, this is the type of thing that makes me wish that we had a benign dictator because our system of government is not working anymore. And I mean, he's a diehard conservative and certainly would not wish for a dictator. But when he sees our form of government perverted in such a fashion, it's enough to make you sick. So we're cautiously optimistic that we are going to prevail on Monday, but it really comes down to what happened behind closed doors and the deals that have been made in the days since the last four votes failed.
And Josh, what does your immediate future look like? We're going to go to a quick break here.
We need to take a quick break, or we're going to have break.
I'm going to hold that question for you.
We're coming back, and my guess is that was Sam Paredes. Are we right? The benign dictator guy.
No.
Okay.
Good guess, but it wasn't
them. Just thought we should check. So anyway, you're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes. We need to thank our advertisers here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
If I die before I wake, VJ, he's been a good dog, my best friend, right through it all. If I die before I wake, VJ.
We're back with Josh Bronis of California Houndsman. You know, it occurred to me as we were coming back in from the break that every nonprofit, every club, every organized group of any kind should make a point of having one person that stays on top of legislative issues, because there's so much going down that so many people don't know about, and they don't know about it until it's a done deal. So, Josh, God forbid this thing should pass tomorrow. Paint a picture of what 2013 looks like for you.
Well, I'm happy to say that if it passes tomorrow, the battle is not over. It would still have to get through the Assembly Appropriations Committee, and their job, their sole job, is to evaluate the fiscal impact that this legislation would have on the state, and it would be very, very significant. And we're optimistic that that they would reject it. It would then, if it does pass appropriations, however, it would be voted on by the Assembly floor, and finally it would get to the governor's desk, where we're hopeful that, given our financial situation, he would take the easy way out, veto the bill, because it does cost the state, and regardless of all the other reasons why he should reject it, he could simply point to that one as his reason for vetoing it. But
what kind of a time frame are we looking at for everything that you've just described?
Well, July is going to be when they take their recess, so the Appropriations Committee hearing wouldn't be until August, and then we would expect it to, if it gets all the way to the governor's desk, to know one way or the other by September whether or not this is going to be our last bear season with our hounds.
Wow. And your response to that personally is, you had shared that with me earlier, I don't know if you want to put that out there, but...
Sure. I mean, I'm in school until July of 2013, but if this does pass, I will be leaving my home state as soon as I can, as soon as I'm out of school next summer. And I'm not alone in this. It's really hard to explain, but being a houndsman or woman goes to the core of who we are. It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle. It's not a hobby. We're not able to put our dogs in the gun safe and pull them out whenever we want. We feed and play with and hunt our dogs every single day and every single week. It goes to, as I said, the core of who we are. So the thought of not being able to be out there in this beautiful state with our hounds is something that so many of us could not bear, and so we would leave the state rather than give up our way of life.
Well, 'cause these dogs can't just turn into house dogs.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, when you consider the fact that these dogs have been bred to do what they do for countless generations, pursuing wildlife and barking and trying to chase them up trees and bark while they're in a tree is so innate within them that they do it, and they almost like they can't help it. And it's amazing to see just how much they truly enjoy it. That's one of the things that the media has remarked on, is when they see my dogs, they see just how obviously enjoyable this activity is to the dogs as well. These dogs are not being coerced into it, and they're not being driven to it as if they're slave labor by any means. This would be very, very cruel to these thousands of dogs in the state that would suddenly stop doing what they've been doing all of their lives and that all of their ancestors have been doing since the days that we domesticated the dog from the wolf.
And, you know, Josh, just as a side note, in addition to that, you know, we talked earlier about other people that go out in the woods with their dogs. My husband is a forester. He's been charged by mountain lions in the past because we have no mountain lion we're not overseeing the mountain lion population in the state of California. He came close to losing his life. We specifically got a lab for him to take out in the woods with him to alert him to that danger when he's out doing his job, and he can no longer do that if this goes through. So what are we supposed to do? Is he supposed to take all that risk?
Oh, yeah.
You know, what do you do?
I guess that would be the expectation, and they'd probably tell you, well, you're on your own, you're taking your chances by being in the woods, which obviously to us is just an entirely foolish thing to say, but I think that is, in many cases, their attitude.
Yeah, we have to kind of suspend reality. And on that note, again, I'm looking at the Humane Society HSUS website, and on this hound hunting bill, this is their comment to the public. And it's no wonder, you know, you can just hoodwink all these people who don't know anything about it. Just one part of their, supposed news on this says, hounding is an inhumane and unsporting practice where trophy hunters use packs of radio-collared dogs to chase down bears and bobcats before the hunter shoots the terrified animal off a tree branch. And then I think it's implied, but there is probably a sound effect that it also leads to dog welfare problems and a dog welfare problem. I didn't know we had dogs on welfare, and a drain on animal sheltering resources because they're all what in the pound. Dogs may be struck by vehicles. I guess out in the woods we have a lot of vehicles, and die a result of dehydration or confrontations with wildlife, or be abandoned at local animal shelters. So I guess you put a collar on them and you run them around out in the woods, and then you forget to bring them home, and then they limp their way to the shelter.
And they can't find the streams to drink out of.
That's
you
right,
know.
No. So besides the fact that that was all a lie.
And doesn't make any sense at all.
And is illogical on the face of it. I mean, honestly, how do you combat that when you have something that, an organization that big saying that kind of stuff?
It's certainly very, very difficult, but we basically just take one lie after the other and illustrate the facts and explain the logic, and then they move on to the next one. That has certainly been the case here with SB 1221. I mean, one of the mistaken assertions that they've made and that they've hoodwinked the author, Ted Lieu, into making is that Montana banned the use of hounds because in 1921 because it was inhumane and did not support what's known as the fair chase principle. That is absolutely not the case, and I was able to procure a letter from Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks that said, we allow the use of hounds for mountain lion, bobcat, and raccoon. We don't for black bear because we don't want the hounds and grizzly bears to come into contact with each other because grizzlies can't climb a tree and they're going to be a lot more aggressive towards the hounds. So they're slowly but surely starting to abandon that argument and moving on to the next and the next and the next.
And you know, Josh, I mean, back to Aaron's question, how do you combat that emotional wordplay? I think what we do is we maybe don't try so hard to convince those that have no basic understanding of the rural lifestyle, and we focus on educating the coalitions that do and bringing those people together for the numbers.
Well, that's certainly a place to start, but we are still the smaller minority in the big scheme of things, especially if this gets out to the ballot, which Wayne Pacelli has threatened to do. He literally gave our state leaders an ultimatum. You will pass SB 1221 or we will introduce a bill on the November 2014 ballot that would ban all bear and bobcat hunting, not just with the use of hounds, but all bear and bobcat hunting. So this obviously would create even more problems if this was to be passed. So we have to reach out into those urban centers all down the left coast of California, if you will, and educate them as to just how poorly conceived this line of thinking is, just how dangerous this line of thinking is. It's not just going to impact the rural areas of the state, although we're certainly going to feel the brunt of it. But if these bears are not kept educated and respectful of humans via the use of dogs and via by using those dogs to run those bears back into the woods, then at the risk of sounding too dramatic, you can't count on being safe if you were to go out on a picnic, as we talked about earlier.
No.
Because bears would not have any reason to respect you as being a human being.
I didn't really think about that, but there is sort of a retraining element that goes on with that. We have Don Shulman on the line who has a question and or a comment for Josh. Hey, Don.
Yes.
Fire away.
Don, are you there? You're on.
I'm here. Am I on?
Yeah, you're on, Don.
Don, you're on.
Oh, good morning.
Yes, you're on.
Your subject is very serious, and it really upsets me because that's what my parents used to do to me, leave me in the woods.
and now we know why.
That explains a lot.
It does explain a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Thank you. I'm glad you have that sympathy for me this morning.
Yes. So were you going to, you know, ask Josh a question or anything?
Yeah.
Fire away.
I'm wondering why I go in the woods. All these bears are upset at me, and now I know why.
Don's obviously off his meds this morning. Continue listening at 10 a.m. when the Don Shulman Show begins for real.
Yeah, we've got Carl Bott coming in at 11 o'clock.
Nice. What are you guys talking about?
Well, we're going to reveal the real Carl Bott.
Oh.
Is that his real name, or is he really on the witness protection program?
Oh, okay. Well, we'll tune in on that. Good luck on the final leg of your commute there, Don.
I may not be here next week after the Carl Bott interview. Talk to you later.
Bye. Okay. After that little diversion, back to hounds, for heaven's sake.
I pray to God Judy's going to be here this morning.
Yeah, you're in trouble, Bob. We're going to go as quickly as we can when we get done here to avoid all that crossover. Okay, Josh, so I don't know that we mentioned it in this hour. We did in the first, but honestly, this attack on hound hunting comes in because it's a minority group of hunters, and at the end of the day, it really is about whittling away our hunting in general, because they really honestly believe that if there is no hunting, we don't need guns.
And that is exactly right.
And we had like a moment of silence.
So it's really about the Second Amendment rights.
Yeah. So for people who are gun owners understand.
And you're not a hunter and you think this doesn't matter to you.
At the end of the day, I guess if you're a constitutional supporter, if you support the Constitution, you should help the hound hunters.
Well, but it all stands to reason that they whittle away at one issue after another. They mm-hmm. start, like Josh said, and like they're doing in Siskiyou County, they start with those that are more defenseless and don't have the greatest numbers and take them out first, and they work their way. I mean, they'll be on your doorstep if you don't help keep them at bay.
Mm-hmm. And I like the way you keep using that, too. It's kind of a dog reference. It's kind of funny to me.
Yeah, not intentional at all. It just seems to be my word of the day.
Exactly. So laced throughout the literature that I'm looking at online about banning hound hunting, it continues to say that it's inhumane and unsporting. So they make it sound like the dog jumps out of the truck and it's all over right there.
They do, and it's interesting because there are so many inconsistencies with even their own arguments. By their own admission, these bear can run up to, as their website indicates, 18 to 20 miles. So when you consider the fact that houndsman or woman has to go wherever the dogs go, because the dogs are going to go wherever the bears go, so those are 18 to 20 miles into the deepest canyons and over the tallest mountains, how could that really be unsporting? That the use of hounds is one of only two methods of hunting other than falconry that actually involves a chase of any kind, and yet they say that it's not fair chase. So their arguments are laced with many, many, many inconsistencies. They also say that they complain that the bear is in close range to us and is shot at point blank range. Well, on the other hand, they then say that hunting is bad because it involves cruelty to animals and that animals may be wounded. Well, if a hound hunter takes a bear that they've treed, it is, in fact, so close that before the shot is even taken, the houndsman or woman can identify that bear and see if it's a male or a female. And if it's a female, they will be able to identify if it has cubs or if it's pregnant or nursing. And so this is a way that we can kind of be very, very selective with the animal that we take. But if we do decide to take that bear for food, the close range of the shot virtually ensures that that bear is going to die instantaneously. So we don't want the shot on an animal to be challenging. That is the last thing that should be challenging. We want the shot to be easy. What we do want is, ideally, is for the challenge to be in getting yourself to the position to take the shot. And when you consider the amount of time that has to go into raising and training these dogs and following those dogs into the roughest country in California, that clearly is the case. The challenge is in getting to the point of the shot, but for many of us, we don't take that shot. We let that bear go and catch it again another day, much like someone would release a trout back into their favorite trout
stream. Hey, Josh, do fish and game wardens, when they're out in the woods, do they have dogs with them?
Some of them actually do, and it goes back to the educating the bears. It's called aversion conditioning.
And do those dogs have instincts?
They do.
And, would they chase a bear, and will they shoot their own dog?
No, because the wardens are exempted, so only law enforcement officials would be exempted from being able to use dogs.
Nice.
Yes,
that's fair.
Exactly.
That's super fair. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it would be awesome if you could kind of take us through a typical, if you were going to go hunting with your dogs, I mean, not from the point where you get the dog as a puppy, but, you know, how does that look? You know, how does that process go to give people an idea? Since most of us have never done that, it would be kind of nice to know. We're going to be back with Josh Bronis. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
I shave my face and comb my hair. Put on a new pair of underwear. Sat on the porch with my Labrador. Like 100 other times before.
Join the conversation in our chat room. KCNR1460.com.
He never tells me that he's sick of this house. He never says, why don't you get off that couch? He don't cost me nothing when he wants to go out. I want you to love me like my dog. He never says I need a new attitude. My sister ain't always in a few. When I leave the seat up, he don't think that it's true. I want you to love me like my dog.
We're back. I know my husband wants to come back in his next life as one of my dogs. I guarantee you that.
That's a complicated and emotional issue you people should sort out.
So yesterday I decided that my dog needed a new dog bed. So I went and I found him this.
You let Dan try it out?
No. Oh,
okay.
But I went and I purchased a new dog bed, and it's got a big indentation of in the shape of a dog bone in the middle of it, and I brought it home and put it on the floor, and he jumped on it and he rolled on it and he sniffed it and he scratched it, and then he turned around six times and lay down in the middle of it. He was so happy. And I'm pretty sure that what I paid for that dog bed paid for somebody's salary yesterday. And no, Dan, I'm not telling you how much I paid.
Darn it, we almost had it out of her. Josh, you know, talk to us about, for one, do hounds live in the house or out of the house? Are there rules about that?
It really depends on the person that owns them. Some of them live inside with the hunters, and I mean there are people that literally sleep with their hounds in the same bed with their hounds.
So, well, our dog sleeps on our bed. I just wondered if that messes them up. I mean, if you know, because like show dogs and different kinds of dogs, you know.
Not at all. Yes, a lot of people have the misunderstanding that because it's a hunting dog, it has to be kept at a distance. You can't form a good relationship with it. It might ruin its hunting instinct. That is not the case. They have their hunting instinct because they've been bred over thousands of generations to do what they do. But they are members of our family. Up until I became a dad, my hounds were the closest thing that I had to kids because, I mean, the process was the same. I was there at the birth of my dogs. I named every one of my dogs. I was there to see them grow, and I remember all the dates that they made all of their major milestones, the first time that they were able to load up into the truck, the first time that they barked when they smelled an animal, the first animal that they ever caught. This is like when the first word and the first step of our children. And so you form these very, very close relationships with your hounds that are is very similar to parent and child, but it's also very similar in some respects to kind of brothers in arms, because the situation with some of these animals, with bears or with wild pigs, can be a little bit hairy. And so you share these close calls with your hounds, and so and live to tell the tale, so to speak. And so you have kind of this camaraderie with your hounds in that respect as well.
It's kind of better than fishing, because fishing, you're with somebody else who can rat you out that the fish really wasn't that big. And with dogs, you know, you could tell any kind of story you want, and the dog's like,
yep. Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, they're great at backing up your bragging and lies.
Tremendous witnesses. So if you were going to go, if you were going to take off and go hunting, how long does it take, and, like, where do you go?
Well, it really depends, and that's one of the things that makes hound hunting very, very interesting, but also a little bit daunting for many people, is the unpredictability. You never know what's going to happen. You may go out there and cover miles and miles and miles, and your dog's not be able to smell a single bear, or you may go out there and they may be able to smell a bear right away. So you never know. But if and when they do in fact smell one, they will bark and let you know. We bred this into them. This is counterintuitive when you think about it, because if a dog is going to be running for many, many miles, the last thing that they would want to do is bark. It's like asking people in a marathon to be chatting with each other as they're running their 26-mile marathon. It actually hurts the performance. But we bred the desire to bark into our hounds, because that is one of the things that we find most appealing about it. We call it music. And every dog barks, and they each have their own voice, and it's just like a choir where every dog is participating in their way into this beautiful sound that we enjoy hearing. So we're able to keep up with the dogs when they are they're pursuing the bear. So whenever they smell that bear scent that the bear has left, and they've got their nose to the ground, kind of in a way that you would think that if we think back to when we were kids and saw the movie Fox and the Hound, that's a very, very approximate representation about what the dog does. It's got its nose to the ground and it's wagging its tail, and when it smells the animal that you're pursuing, it's barking, and it's letting you know, I smell it, I smell it. Well, it's trying to get closer and closer to the bear, and then it's going to try and convince that bear to climb a tree. Now, there are a lot of bears that will run past hundreds or thousands of trees during this pursuit, and they're just going to keep on running. And those bears that eat their Wheaties sometimes will outrun the dogs, and sometimes after many, many miles, the dogs give up. But while the dogs are pursuing that bear, you are trying to keep up with that dog. Those dogs and that bear can run a lot faster than we can, and they are a lot better shape than any human is. And so we're trying to keep within hearing of the dogs. And so they may be on the next mountain from us, and so as they go over that mountain, we try and catch up and go over that mountain too. So that's when we wear out a lot of boot soles.
And that's why you have radio collars on them.
Well, the radio collars are helpful if the dog has abandoned the pursuit. So the bears can run 30 to 35 miles an hour, and they can run for miles and miles. So sometimes our dogs just say, forget this. This bear is not going to stop. We're not going to be able to ever catch up to him. And so when they decide to quit pursuing that bear, they're no longer going to bark. And imagine yourself, you've been following your dogs and this bear for many miles, and you no longer hear your dogs, you have no idea where they are. That's when we bring out the equipment that will allow us to keep track of the radio collars that they have on. Now, just to mention very quickly about this technology, it was coming into widespread use at the same time that bell bottoms were coming into fashion.
Wow.
It was literally that old. The sport has advanced, thankfully, and GPS collars are now available for hound hunters, but I'm sorry to say that California is the only state in the country that bans the use of GPS specifically for hounds. You're allowed to use them for your livestock dogs, your pet dogs, your upland game bird dogs, and your waterfowl dogs. But the one type of dog that will be out in the roughest country in California pursuing the animals that can run the furthest is precisely the type of dog where GPS is not allowed.
I don't get it.
So again, going back to your comment about an utter lack of logic down at the Capitol, I think this is one of many examples of that.
not that we were having a shortage.
Yeah, there's plenty of that to go around.
Which is just distressing. I am sorry, we got jammed up on our break, so we've got to fit in one more quick commercial break before we come back. And Josh, you can take it the rest of the show. Tell people whatever you want them to know.
And mostly, Josh, what can we tell people to do? They always need to know what they can do.
Exactly. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hound dog man, I wanna be a hound dog man. I'm gonna get me an old hound dog. I wanna let him lead the way. Then I'm gonna turn him loose. We'll go hunting every day. That's the kind of life for me. There's one thing I wanna be, and that's a hound dog man. Hound dog man, I wanna be a hound dog man.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Who let the dogs out?
Hooter, 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 hooter.
Who let the dogs out?
Hooter, 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 hooter.
Who let the dogs out?
Hooter, 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 hooter.
Who let the dogs out?
We're back. Great.
How did we not see that coming?
I've heard that song used in a variety of ways in the past. Hey, so Josh, tell people where they can reach you, contact information, website again, and what they can do.
I'd be glad to. So we'd invite all of your listeners to go to californiahoundsmen.com and inform themselves as to the truth about hound hunting and all the wonderful things that California Houndsmen for Conservation does for wildlife research and for law enforcement, for the Boy Scouts of America, for the Department of Fish and Game. But more importantly, inform yourself about the status of 1221 and what you can do to help fight this latest example of the threat to our individual liberties. It's got the contact information for the assembly members that we would like you to contact. It's got a list of things that you can do in terms of contacting your representative, visiting the websites of other organizations such as the National Rifle Association, California Outdoor Heritage Alliance, etc. And the biggest thing, I think, is to make sure that we're all kept very informed. California Houndsmen for Conservation is a part of multiple organizations, and we're all fighting a common battle against a common foe. But there are other websites that provide information as to what the ultimate intentions of the HSUS is and how they are not truly a charity as they would have you believe. So if you have a moment, please visit humanewatch.org. And they will expose all of the mistruths and misconceptions involving the HSUS. And there's also Charity Watch, who, consistent with the most recent years, has again given HSUS a D rating in terms of how they spend the money that is donated to them by well-intentioned Americans.
Give those last two again. There's Charity Watch, and what was the other one? Humane Watch?
And Humane Watch. Humane Watch is an organization that does nothing but expose the HSUS for who they really are and what they ultimately intend to do.
Nice.
Well, you can't do that too often. And tomorrow's rally, give them the info on the Capitol deal tomorrow.
So we're going to be having a rally, a demonstration against 1221 at 11:30 on the south side of the Capitol, on the steps of the Capitol, and everyone is welcome to attend. You do not have to be a houndsman or woman, just somebody who is resisting this latest attack on our individual liberties. And for those of you that want to give a very clear message to our legislature that they need to quit wasting their time on such unnecessary legislation such as 1221 and focus on putting our residents back to work and putting them back into their houses and helping our kids with a more higher quality education, putting the felons back into prison.
Hey,
this is our chance to send a very, very clear message to them.
So good time for folks to get up early in the morning and make those phone calls, let's say before 10 o'clock?
Yes, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, because if you're calling them when they're out, well, I don't know. There's a lot of protesting goes on at the Capitol, so sometimes if it's not targeted properly, it's just a bunch of people hollering out on the lawn. But if the legislation is being heard, that's terrific. And it is Senator LaMalfa's birthday tomorrow, so maybe you could give him a little grief about that. But I'm glad he'll be speaking at the rally. He, just as a little note, there was a bill pending 1279, AB 2179. My God, I'm losing my mind. AB 2179. We've been up to our ears in that. And that was a fish and game bill that was going to give them all sorts of extra power. And that went through. That went through committee last week. The senator spoke for 10 minutes about that and what it was going to do to our area. And at the end of the day, they were, you know, looking at their phones and looking at the floor and this and that. And he finished speaking and they voted. Poof. Done.
Because the deals had been made.
Yep. Over. So, anyway, it has been a kind of a dreary week for legislation affecting rural America.
That one would basically give Fish and Game the teeth they need to enforce the other one.
Well, yes. And they now get to hear the complaints and the appeals go to the director of Fish and Game. How do you feel about that, Josh? You think that'll work out for you?
I'm not optimistic, no.
Yeah, it's probably not going to go real well. Yeah, interesting. So much for all the fun things we came to this state for.
And I hope that we have made your weekend cheerful and optimistic, as usual.
we are
told we're funny.
Dear God, the joking stopped there at the moment. That's why we have Bob with the good hound music. So Josh Brownis from California Houndsman.
Thank you so much, Josh.
And Conservation. And we'll see you tomorrow. I'll look for you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it. Thank you both so very much.
Thank you for coming on.
Keep up the good fight, Josh. We're there with you.
We'll have the archive of the show up here pretty quick so you can send it to your friends and get them to call on this horrible bill, SB 1221. See you next week.
Let's roll, America. There's a job to be done. Let's roll, America. There's a battle.
This is KCNR Shasta Redding. Don and Judy are next.